This podcast is part of a series called Elevate My Pharmacy Career. I'm Ella Shearing, an early career pharmacist.
And I'm Yanni Liu, a pharmacy student working with Pharmacy Career Platform. This encompasses both Locumate, an online platform connecting locums and pharmacies, and Jobs in Pharmacy, a digital marketplace connecting you to careers in pharmacy.
In this Elevate My Pharmacy Career series, we get a chance to deep dive into the careers of trailblazers within the pharmacy industry. Using our student team, we explore the expansive career opportunities in the pharmacy industry by focusing on new innovation, technology, and the people driving it. In each episode, we will bring on a new guest speaker who's been making a real impact within this community.
We are so, so honored today to be joined by Lisa Nguyen, who is a pharmacist, entrepreneur, founder, and CEO of Astra Dispensary. Lisa has had an incredibly dynamic and varied pharmacy career and professional story, with a passion for upskilling, educating healthcare professionals on the therapeutic use for medicinal cannabis and empowering pharmacists to follow their passions. Astra Dispensary is Australia's first female-led green dispensary with an ethos of innovating the traditional pharmacy model and is a pioneer in cannabinoid medicine and plant-based therapies located in the heart of South Yarra in Melbourne. Welcome to the podcast, Lisa.
Thanks so much, guys. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
And just to break the ice a little, my first question is, what TV show have you been binge watching? And could you please share that with us?
Oh, that's really embarrassing. what am I watching at the moment? I'm watching something, but I don't know the name. So because my life is so busy, I have to watch really, really like non-serious things sometimes. And sometimes it's like... Sometimes it's just like a trashy TV show, but at the moment I'm watching this Japanese TV show on Netflix called, is it Makanai? It's about these two young girls who are from, I think from a rural town, and they move to Kyoto and then they train to become geishas, and they're like little sisters, and then one of them becomes really successful and becomes a really good geisha, but then the other one is, she's a bit clumsy, and so she's not as good, but then they were going to kick her out, but then they found out she's really good at cooking, and she's literally there just to support her best friend or her sister. It's so sweet. She's really, really good.
Mine was also a Japanese one too, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a bit more serious though. It's called Alice in Borderland. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's actually really good, but it's very, like, keeps you on the edge of your seat. Very, very good.
Cool. And for me recently, I don't know if this counts as a TV show, but I've just been watching the tennis a lot, the Australian Open. So we're going to watch live on Sunday. But my best friend has recommended a show called Utopia, which is all about the public servant scene in Australia, and it's a comedy. So I think I'll definitely start watching that as well.
Cool.
We can move on to the next question, which is, yeah, I've shared before that on the first day of opening Astra Dispensary in 2020 during the lockdown, there were actually no customers in the store to begin with, and you personally walked into the street to attract customers. But fast forward now to 2022, there are over 1,000 plus five-star reviews on Google, and your business is continuing to grow and expand with new locations coming in Byron Bay and more exciting things to come. So we're really curious, what do you think are some of the factors or reasons behind the positive response and reception from patients in the community?
Yeah, so we have grown really fast. It's been 2 years since we've kind of launched Astrid. And, you know, the first day that I opened was probably, the first day was the hardest day of the business ever, because it's kind of like climbing a mountain and you're at the very bottom and you have no idea how high the mountain's going to be. And you don't know any of the booby traps that's along the way. And you're like, I hope I make it. And so I remember the very first day we had no customers and stuff, but what I really try to focus on from back then and even now, what we focus on the same thing now but in a kind of different way, is focusing on the patient journey as closely as we can. And so one of the values that we have within Astra, and now the team have 4 or 5 values that we kind of follow as a guide as to where we want the company to grow, but one of the values is patient obsession. And so that means not just high level things, but also minute things. And it could be very simple things as well, as in terms of like maybe a basket is located in a very, wrong place, or it could be the way that the clicker button is you know, disturbing their journey. And it's about collaborating with the team to figure out different ways that we can really improve on the journey again and again and again. And so I think my team now know that I'm so obsessed with the patient journey, to the point where every time I catch up with them, I'm like, how's that going with that process? Is that going well? Like, do you think that we can make it better? And so having that mentality where things are, you know, in a traditional pharmacy, it's just you take a prescription in, you dispense it, you counsel the patient, they go to the till date, they buy it. It's quite set in stone. But what I've trained my pharmacists to do is think that things are always dynamic, and I would rather you focus on the things that are going wrong and for us to improve on it and get it even better than just to accept things the way they are. And it also helps that the model that we have is very different to a traditional pharmacy as well. And so it means that when pharmacists come in, they're really like, oh, this is really different. I'm not really used to this. So they're not going back to the old ways. Because in many ways, I do think that the way that the pharmacy system is kind of molded, or the framework that is there currently, is trained to teach pharmacists to be traditional pharmacists. But I do believe that there is a new generation, a new era of the next wave of pharmacists, particularly post-COVID, where everything's very digital nowadays. The patient journey is no longer always brick and mortar. There is a lot of digital element as well. And we need to be able to provide healthcare in that way as well. And so going from zero customers, going on the street, trying to like bring them in and knowing their story is number one. And we grew that by understanding patients, like literally understanding their journey one patient at a time. In the very beginning, I just had myself and one other staff member. Her name is Judy, and she was probably someone that isn't from particularly a pharmacy background. She's actually a nurse. And she is great in that she's an all-rounder. And so it means that she's very good at problem solving. So whenever there's a problem, she gets really excited. She's like, oh, how else can I solve this problem? And for me in the early days, having someone like that with that mentality was amazing. Rather than getting someone from a traditional pharmacy who would be like, oh, well, we should do this because this is how it's always been done. And so then she and I literally for the first 6 months just memorized everyone's history. Like every single patient that came in, I memorized them, their mum, their history, their medical history, what else is working for them, what's not working for them, what other doctors can we refer them to. And we did that for 6 months and really understood the patient journey. And then I started hiring more people to help as we grew.
That's fantastic. I love that. And you can see Ella and I were nodding our heads along, because it's so incredible to see almost redefining what patient-centered care is, with that idea of being obsessed with the patient and getting to know them. And you and Judy sound like an incredible partner, going above and beyond memorizing that history and getting to know them as a person and also as a patient, and following along with their journey. And I think that's a real legacy that you'll leave behind, like your brand and your business and who you are as a pharmacist. So that's amazing.
I wanted to move on now from personal experience with medicinal cannabis. It's such a new space for pharmacy. And I recently did a locum shift at a pharmacy that provided this service. And it's something that I've never experienced before. So it was very new for me. And one of the things I was most surprised about is just the sheer diversity and number of products that are available. So like the oils, the patches, capsules, the dried herb. But what was also really interesting was the terminology that people were using surrounding these products. So obviously you've got, you know, cannabis, there's marijuana, THC, CBD, and a plethora of other street names as well. What would be a good place to start to determine, or just to work out from you, what kind of language should we be using when we are referring to these products and when we're talking to patients and in a professional setting? How should we be referring to them?
I mean, it's so interesting, because like it goes back to the kind of the history of medical cannabis and how did this plant become legalized in our country. And it is really different in every single country as well. And if you look at the history of the plant, it's something that's been illicit for so long. And when when something has been illicit for so long, there's so many misconceptions and different types of like associations with it. And honestly, everyone that I talk to has a different connection or perception of what cannabis is. And that for me is really, really interesting, because for me, cannabis is so normal now. And I've been obsessed with cannabis since I was very young, probably too young. But that's something that I find really, really interesting, because basically the Australian government legalized cannabis in about 2016, right? And so that what that means is that it used to be a Schedule 9 medication, and then in 2016 the government moved it to a Schedule 8, making it a prescription medication, and also some Schedule 4s as well. And so that means it's accessible via doctor on prescription dispensed by a pharmacist. But the only reason why this plant or this medicine is available and why it was moved from a Schedule 9 to a Schedule 8 is because there was patients who advocated for the therapeutic use of this medication. So there is a mum, Lucy Haslam, who's very big in the cannabis advocacy space at the moment, and she's this amazing lady, and her son was suffering from, you know, a really terminal illness, and the only way for her son to actually get better was for him to access it illicitly. And, you know, as a mother, and if your son is suffering, of course you're going to do whatever it takes. Her husband actually was also a police officer, and he still, you know, gave her Dan the medication as well. And so even after Dan passed, she continued with her work in advocacy and advocated for the use of cannabis. And so when people say, what should I call it? For a lady like this to use it for her son, it's medicinal. And so when we use terminologies, we need to remember that a lady fought for this to be legalized in Australia, to be used medicinally for a son. So therefore it's medicinal cannabis. And so you might hear words like, you know, dope or, you know, marijuana, all those kind of things fly around. And a lot of those people are saying those things because it's miseducation. There's a stigma associated with it. They don't know the struggle that Lucy had with Dan accessing it. They don't know the patients that we see every day. They go down the road to some street corner to get it because they're suffering from chronic pain and nothing else works, and they don't realize it's legal. And those patients are using it medicinally. They need it because it's making them feel better for their anxiety, for their pain. And so therefore, for me, it is definitely medicinal. And if I can get more and more people using the terminology medicinal cannabis or even cannabinoids, which is the active ingredient, that's also a tick for me as well. But as soon as we start saying things like weed or dope or, you know, joints or whatever it is, then it adds to the stigma. And what we really are fighting for is to decrease the stigma.
It sounds like patient advocacy has played a huge role in reducing the stigma as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Patient advocacy is literally the heart of this entire industry, in my personal opinion. That we have so much more work to do. Within ASHRD, we have a patient advocacy arm of the business as well. So a colleague of mine, Bea, she and I used to work at Canopy Growth together. So that was a big global Canadian company, and I was an MSL where I educated doctors, and her role was in patient advocacy in government relations. And so her role was in understanding, well, what the regulations are currently, what are the barriers for patients and how to help them. And so when I started ASHRD, she came along with me on the journey, and she became our head of patient advocacy and stakeholder engagement. And so a lot of the times people are like, well, what does that mean? What does she do? And literally we fight for our patients. And so what I mean by that is that we have patients call us up going, oh my God, ASHRD, I'm arrested. I'm being handcuffed right now. What do I do? And it's because even the police don't realize that this patient's using a legal flower, a legal herb, and yet they're arresting them for possession. And so for us, that's stigma, that's miseducation. And so our role at ASHRD, we're not just a pharmacy. I tell my team this all the time. We are making movement and waves in the industry, and we're going to change this space up. And that starts with changing one politician, one police officer, one patient at a time, and starting with changing the way we say cannabis. It should be medicinal, and it should be used in a way that's therapeutic.
Totally agree with that. And it is an area that holds a lot of stigma, like a lot of other health services that have been coming in community as well. So like opioid replacement therapy and needle syringe programs, they do have a lot of stigma from the general public. What's something that you would like, I guess, the general public and other healthcare professionals to know about people that use these products or these products in general that may help to break down the stigma a bit?
I think it definitely comes down to patient education. And so they could be, you know, and also community education as well, and understanding that particular patient's journey. We do a lot of patient stories and allowing people to really deep dive into someone's journey and understanding why it is that they are choosing this pathway and why everything else is not working. I think as soon as people understand that people are doing this in order to get better and this is an option for them to have a better life, to improve their lifestyle, then they'll be more understanding. But I think face level, of course, it's going to have that stigma, but it's up to us, particularly as pharmacists and healthcare professionals. You know, we've got a really good reputation in the healthcare industry. It's up to us to be the ones to tell people and tell them, actually, no, I think that, you know, this person is using it for this purpose, and maybe we can run an education session in pharmacy for you to have a better understanding of that. And just calling people out when they are saying those things instead of letting it slide, because that's when it kind of like snowballs. And then that's when all these kind of like crazy rumors and ideas kind of start about, you know, what things are.
So previously you mentioned your experience working as a medical science liaison, and I know you've worked across multiple facets within pharmacy, locuming, community pharmacy, hospital pharmacy. You've always had a side hustle, you've said, you know, having an e-commerce store, consulting as well, very diverse experiences. Yeah. So how do you think that following, that gut feeling, has led to where you are today? And why do you think it's so important to be listening and hearing and following that gut feeling?
Such a good question. I think that my journey today has been from a multitude of reasons, but a lot of it comes down to, I guess, like two or three core things. And number one, yes, it's following your gut and understanding that. But I think the very first thing that I would say is it's actually understanding what you don't and do like. And so I really honed in my interest in sales, and then that's why I started being in corporate. And I tried the community, I tried the hospital, and when I joined corporate, I loved it because it was so structured, and it was so much, there's so many goalposts that you have to reach with this. You're always aiming for something, and I'm a hustler. Like, I'm always chasing something, right? So I need that thing to push me. And I loved being in front of doctors, and I loved doing sales, right? But in order for me to realize that sales is my thing, you need to go through a lot of detours. And so, like, one takeaway I'd say for young pharmacists is don't be afraid of taking a detour in order to be where you need to be. Sometimes I think, you know, young pharmacists think, okay, well, I'm starting as an intern here, I want to be here, and that's fine, because that means you're aiming for something and you're pushing for something. But when you're aiming for here and it takes you to a detour, go for it. Don't be afraid of that as well, because you won't be you'll be surprised as to where that detail will take you, and it could be where you need to be eventually, but you don't know. But if you come really kind of like fixated on that one thing you want to be, then you're not going to explore all the potential opportunities that this journey or career is going to take you on. And the other thing I'd say is I learned about what I really loved, and I figured out that it was, you know, people and sales and brand. But the other thing is also understanding what you don't like. That is just as important as knowing what you do like, because if you know what you don't like, then you know when to say no to opportunities. And so, like, I've put myself through a lot of jobs and a lot of opportunities where I didn't love them, but I knew that I had to put myself through them, even if it's just for a year, because then I'm like, I never want to do this ever again. And so for myself personally, I know that technical jobs are not for me, because my brain hurts. Like, I can't. And I'm the worst dispensing pharmacist in the history of the world. Like, never hire me for a dispensing pharmacist role. Like, I would not add value to your business. And it's just things like that, and understanding where your strengths are as well as your weaknesses. These abilities to have that awareness is going to be your guiding light. But in order to do that, you need to take detours. You need to make mistakes. You need to be able to take one step back to take two steps forward. And a really good example of that was, I was having lunch with a friend the other day, and he works in a really, really big pharmaceutical company. I think he works in Novartis at the moment. And so he was saying how, you know, when he was a young pharmacist, all of his friends were in, you know, kind of like pharmacist in charge kind of roles. And he decided that he wanted to work for GSK. But in order to do that, he had to take a $40,000 pay cut. And all his friends were on, like, you know, bigger, you know, salaries and stuff. And he felt at the time he wasn't sure whether it was the right thing, but he felt in his gut that he wanted to do that. And now he has exceeded them, but he's now a senior salesperson at Novartis, specializing in oncology, and getting promotions year on year, and giving so many opportunities. And also, not only that, he's learned and grown a lot as well. When you work for a big pharma, they teach you a lot of different skill sets that you don't normally get taught in pharmacy as well. And it's a lot more strategic. And for him, if he had not listened to his gut at that time and not taken that detour or step back in his career, he wouldn't be, you know, five steps ahead of all his colleagues now.
That's so amazing. Thank you for sharing the anecdote and story of your colleague as well. Just to continue that metaphor of, you know, the detour and that journey, which is your life, you said very important to be taking those journeys, U-turns, because otherwise you wouldn't have learned that lesson that you can take later down the track and you don't realize it at the time. So thank you for bringing that, you know, front and center in terms of having that self-awareness of yourself, staying true to yourself and listening to your inner voice and your values as well. So you've just talked a bit about your brand and I'd love to talk more. So you've emphasized the importance of forming a really strong brand and ethos from the outset of starting Astra Dispensary. And Astra Dispensary in itself has such a unique and distinctive branding, from the naming of the pharmacy, which is reflective of a really strong female name. And I believe it's a name you like for your daughter as well. To the design being minimalist and the color itself, it's so incredibly calming, inviting, and draws from the natural plant inspirations. Ella and I are just completely in awe of the design and layout of Astra Dispensary. So we're curious to know, what was the thought process behind these choices and why is branding for a pharmacy so, so crucial?
I think branding is not just in pharmacy, in business, even in life, is everything. And I think that sounds probably overly profound, but I think it is very true, because brand is essentially what you stand for and your how you portray yourself to the world. If you portray yourself as everything and everything to everyone, people will be very confused as to what you believe in, what you value and what you stand for. And the same rings true for Astrid, definitely. I was very lucky in that I was very sure of what the core was at all times. And I started the vision with being super patient-centric, but I also knew that, you know, I wanted the brand to involve building community as well. And a lot of the team now, we have a very diverse team of lots of different ethnicities. And the diversity and the inclusion within our team is really what drives us forward now. And I think that by really understanding that I wanted that from the get-go, and that was part of the brand strategy as well. So understanding, you know, what are my three or four pillars that I want to focus on when I start this journey is really, really important. So they're usually values, right? The things like the aesthetics, like the colors and the fonts and the materials, they come after you understand what the vision is and what you want to achieve in this world and what do you want your brand to do for society. And then you know your values, and at least then you understand what kind of actions you would take as a business or as the person to achieve that. And then after you know those, then you can layer that. It's because I knew that I wanted to be patient-centric. I knew that it was people-centric and it's about plants. Then green was a no-brainer, because people love green and plants are green and green is so calming, and the purpose of this space is to calm people. So that was really good. Choosing that green, though, is a different story. For someone like me who's very meticulous about aesthetics and I'm very, like, particular about how things look and things, it took me many trips back and forth to Bunnings, and I ended up making a custom green colour and mixing three colours together to make that green. But I painted it on the walls and I let it dry and I chose the green. I'm like, oh, what would it look like in this light?
How many greens did you go through?
I had three, and I actually posted it on Instagram, and I was like to my friends, like, hey guys, which one do you like? And everyone chose one color, and I actually chose the opposite. It was so funny. But I knew that I wanted natural materials, because the brand is going to be basing off, you know, nutraceuticals, plant-based medicine. So it has to tie into the story. And so if my story is based off empowering people, empowering plant-based medicines, then therefore we have to be using materials that also translate that. Otherwise it wouldn't ring true. And so that was all kind of easy. And then one of my good friends is an architect, and she's also a female-led architectural firm as well. And so she and I collaborated on doing the design and things like that. And even design now, we're building out our second dispensary currently in Byron Bay. And it looks amazing. Like, I think it looks better than South Yarra, honestly.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, so it's going to look amazing. And so our strategy is, because my vision has always been very boutique, smaller, I don't want to have a million Ashwoods throughout the country. I would like just one or two in each state and keep it really small and boutique. And so we're going with kind of like the ESOP model a little bit, where each ESOP kind of, it feels like an ESOP, but then has slightly different grains or colors or wood or materials, but it's still minimalist, still very sleek, still the same experience for every single person walking into that store. And so I put a lot of thought into Byron Bay, and we used materials that reflected the hinterland here, used like material that reflected the ocean and the rock that is in Byron Bay as well. And I think that is also important, because that also feeds into the brand and the thoughtfulness that you put into when you build a company as well.
I love how you've integrated the surrounding environments into the store as well. It really brings it out in.
Yeah, yeah, because we do have plans. So South Yarra is quite, you know, urban, because it's in, you know, a very trendy part of Melbourne. Byron Bay definitely is a lot more earthy and more hinterlandy, and it has a bit of ocean through it. We have plans of doing Brisbane later this year as well, and then next year, hopefully, Sydney. And so the Brisbane store, obviously, we might make it a bit brighter. Brisbane's a very sunny state, and so we might make it like a different shade of green that's a bit lighter. Maybe the wood is a bit like a bit more Scandinavian as well. And so I have all these grand plans on how to design all these stores in future.
That's incredible. Thank you so much, Lisa. And it's crazy that you're saying how the community and the location itself really shapes how you think of whether it's a design aspect of the Astra dispensary as well, because our next question that we have for you, it almost seems like you have psychic powers and you have preempted it. It's about how Astra dispensary is located in the heart of South Yarra. And like you said, it's a very much urban suburb. And for any non-Melburnian listeners, South Yarra is quite an affluent neighborhood. It has a lot of historic architecture, lots of, you know, contemporary eateries there and designer shopping outlets throughout, and very close to the city. So my question was going to be, how has the demographic and community of South Yarra, where Astra Dispensary is located, really influenced and impacted the ways in which you have provided your services or set up the dispensary specifically?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my brand positioning and the way that I'm intending to roll out the brand is that we are a service-based model. And so a lot of the brand is we would like to be perceived as a female-led dispensary, focusing on plants and people and empowering people. But it also is more of a premium dispensary as well. So that means that often we can be about, you know, $5 or $10 more than another dispensary. But our pharmacists spend a lot of time consulting with patients. We really value the ability to have multiple pharmacists on site, and we really value the time that we spend as pharmacists as well. And often I do a lot of advocating for pharmacists when I'm in a lot of my kind of outside Astrid kind of meetings, because I am so passionate about what we do. Like, we are literally the gatekeepers, and we double check everything for doctors and clinics and suppliers, and we are the end journey for the patient. And so I'm really proud that we are more premium and service based, meaning that I can put more pharmacists on to support patients. And so that means that when I am picking locations, I'm picking locations that are in areas that would like high-end services as well. So in areas where people are more health-centric, where wellness is really, really you know, front and center of people's livelihoods.
I can hear the passion in your voice when you're talking about the pharmacy, and it sounds like really exciting. When you mentioned with the female-led dispensary, how important or how intentional was that when you were creating Astrid?
Yeah, I think it's so important. And I guess I'm still surprised as to how male-dominated a lot of healthcare industries and particularly corporations as well. It's quite male-dominated. And so I believe that I'm a different type of leader, and I'm not a perfect leader. I'm still learning. But I think that as a leader, I've chosen to be a lot more empathetic and a lot more earnest as a leader. And that means slowing down growth when I need to, and spending time with my people as well. And so when you're in a lot of these meetings and it's just me and, you know, a lot of different male leaders in like executive positions, CEOs or general managers, it's really evident that my intention to do a female-led dispensary was needed. And so to answer your question bluntly, yes, it was intentional, but also because I believe that it needed to be said and needed to be represented.
Yeah, definitely. So did you want to make a comment, Yanni?
Yeah, so when you were talking about before with the colour scheme and pharmacists being a point of review, I've recently did a tour of New Parliament House in Canberra, and it just really reminded me of the House of Representatives, where they literally, behind the design of it, they were looking at different shades of green, which represented the eucalyptus leaves, and that really represented modern Australia. And then the Senate being a House of Review. So I think just going on that tour and then listening to what you were speaking, that's really deliberate in how you have specifically designed these patient-centered services from the design to the team itself. So that's an amazing way to think of it. And that's just what popped into my head.
And it's true, because it comes back to the two core things of any business or anything really in life. And it's always people. So the two things that we are passionate about at Ashford is being obsessed with our patients. So that's understanding the patient journey, but also being obsessed with our people. And that's my pharmacists, my technicians, my assistants, and really understanding what it is that they need and what's going to drive them, and how they're all unique as well. And that all feeds into the brand. If the pharmacists and the patients are supported, then Ashford will grow and will grow, you know, will rise together as a tide. But it's not about just focusing on one thing and churning through prescriptions. Is not even about that at all.
Definitely. We just want to circle back to when you were first developing Ashford, and it is a very specialised pharmacy. Just for the listeners as well, you don't just do medicinal cannabis, you also do other products as well, but it really is the first of its kind in Australia. What has been the process of setting up and introducing these products into Australia, and what are some of the unique challenges that you've experienced that most traditional pharmacies, like a Priceline or a Chemist Warehouse, are there anything unique to Astra that you've come across?
Yeah. I think we need a second podcast for this.
I'd love you to come for a second podcast with
us. I guess from a pharmacy perspective, opening, because I guess there's two things to talk about. Number one, it's pharmacy and opening a pharmacy and what does that look like? Number two is cannabis and dispensing cannabis and what does that look like? And then how do you marry the two up in a way that's really smooth for patients? And so when I first opened, and I guess when I was trying to open, the trouble is when you look at pharmacy right now, you have Chemist Warehouse, which is, you know, one of the biggest pharmacy chains in Australia. And then you have TerryWhite and you have Priceline. Those models at the core are very similar in that it's very much, you know, the same systems, maybe tweaked a little bit in different places. And the structure and the flow is always very similar as well. When you walk into those pharmacies, you walk through aisles and aisles of different products before you get to the dispensary and you see the pharmacist. Pharmacists are always behind the counter and they're always wearing white coats. So in that sense, it's always quite, it's already the same and cookie cutter almost. And when I wanted to open Astrid, I knew that I didn't want that. And so that was, for me, a good thing, because I already knew what I didn't want. And so when I approached people who were shop fitters who normally do pharmacies, and they said that they could do this for me, and when they told me that they'll make it like a Priceline or Chemist Warehouse or whatever it was, I'm like, oh no, I don't want that. So that was already an easy decision for me not to go with them, right? And so then the difficulty was, okay, if I can't go with someone who already knows what they're doing and does a pharmacy, then how do I do it? And that's difficult, because that means that I got to start literally from ground zero. And I put that on myself, because my vision was I want it not to look like a pharmacy. I want it to feel different. I want it to be a mixture of a lounge, a cafe, and a shop, and all these kind of things merged in one, so that people can feel calm, so they don't feel stressed like they're waiting for a prescription. And so I put that, I guess, hurdle upon myself for wanting that very unique vision. And so the good thing about that is that because I knew that I wanted that, it meant that all I needed to do was find someone who could help me build that. And so I ended up going with a shop fitter who was not a pharmacy shop better, which actually was to my benefit because I saw things from a very different lens. So like, oh, okay, we could do this, we could do this kind of thing. So long as I could work within the pharmacy regulations, and every single state will have its own pharmacy regulations when you build a pharmacy. For example, Melbourne or South Yarra is Victoria, and they have their own Victorian Pharmacy Authority guidelines. In New South Wales, I'm following the New South Wales Pharmacy Council guidelines. Very, very different. And every single state will have its own guidelines. So you really have to deep dive and know them. And then once you know them, you can work around them to build what you want to build, so long as you're ticking on the boxes and being compliant. And then after that is you find a shop fitter. In Melbourne, when I was doing it at the time, I spent all my savings to open Astrid, and so I had no money. And so what I did was I used my Vietnamese uncle at the time to help me build it, and I became the project manager. So I learned how to build it. And so I would manage the electrician, the plumbers, the joiners, and whatever it else was that needed to be done. And that was great because I hated it. So number one, I don't want to do it ever again. But number two was I understand now how to build a pharmacy, literally to the material and to the join. I really get how to do it now. And so when I build my second one, which is Byron Bay, I can really collaborate with the builder to be like, hey, actually, no, this is wrong. I can do this or do it better. But at the essence, you're following the pharmacy board guidelines for that state. And then you build the vision or the, I guess, how you want the pharmacy to look and feel upon that. Alternatively, if you are not crazy like me, and you want to build a regular pharmacy, you can go to a pharmacy shop fitter. They've already got the templates for different layouts and things, and they can help you do that.
Wow, that's so interesting that there's so many different ways you can go about just designing a pharmacy, which is just one small, well, I mean, small but very important aspect of pharmacy as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like you're almost picked up the entire skill sets of being an interior designer along the way as well. They talk about upskilling. It's a whole profession that you've unlocked as well.
I really love design. I should have done design in university.
So just taking a turn of another direction, for our younger listeners, our pharmacy students and early career pharmacists, and previously when you talked about really listening to that inner voice and following your passions, what role has mentorship and reaching out for advice played in your career and setting up Astra Dispensary? It sounds like you have attracted amazing people to your team, and they really form the foundation of that initial board of people who believed in the values of Astra Dispensary, whether that's family or work colleagues or friends or loved ones. So any examples that you can share with us?
For sure. Mentors is so important. And if I could give you any advice as a young pharmacist, is that always reach out to people who are in careers or in positions where you think they're interesting. Maybe you don't know that you want to do that, but you're intrigued by how they got there and why they're doing it. Just reach out to them. Like, you know, 9 out of 10 times, they'll be happy to answer you. They'll be happy to share their story with you. Personally, I am mental obsessed. So I had, my entire career, had many people that I really looked up to. And then they weren't always in pharmacy. I was pretty like obsessed with startups as well. And I really love startup. Every single startup TV show I've probably watched. Every movie of startups I've watched, I've read startup books. I follow people in the startup industry on Instagram and LinkedIn. And I go to conferences on startup, not because I had a business at the time. I had small e-commerce businesses on the side, but they weren't like truly like scaling that kind of thing. But I learned a lot from people who were doing a lot of really interesting things, and that really helped to shape me and help me become a lot more willing to take risks, knowing that literally anything is possible in this world. Like, there's nothing that can stop us from doing what we want to do, so long as we really hustle, put the work in, try and get better, be okay with making mistakes. And then, yeah, so recently a mentor of mine said to me that, you know, every few years, everyone should be thinking about the five people in their lives that they spend the most time with. And it's these five people that are going to be the ones shaping you. And if you know that you want to do something, so for example, one of my other ambitions after, during this and after this is to write a book about something, or maybe my journey or whatever it is. And that's one of my, you know, far away ambitions. And so, you know, one of my mentors is like, if you know that you want to write a book, then you need to have someone in your inner five that has written a book. Because if they haven't done that, then they're not going to help you get there. And so I found that to be really, really great advice. And every few years I reassess who my inner five are and really think about, okay, well, who's in my inner five? And, you know, in life, things will change. You know, you change, your friends changes, and you move to different cities and your ambitions change. You get married, you have kids, all that kind of stuff. And your inner five will always change. But it's so important to just reassess who they are every couple of years to see if it is aligned with where you want to go in your life.
That's some really great advice. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I think what we take away from that as well is that you've really kind of taken all these diversified skill sets and just brought them into kind of a common goal. Is that something that you'd recommend for other students to do? Just kind of take a bit of this, take a bit of that, try everything out, and then bring it together?
Yep, for sure. I believe if you're young, just try everything. Even if you don't like it, just try it. And then once you try everything, you'll figure out what you love, what you really, really love. And I think that the concept of love and passion is so, like, you know, said so often in society these days. But I think when you really, truly find your passion, you can't sleep. Like, there are nights where I can't sleep because I'm just writing stuff in my phone, in my notes, because I'm like, oh my God, this is such a great idea. Like, I want to do this. And you're truly passionate. But, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to be passionate about something, but I didn't know what it was. So what I did was I just tried everything, even if I failed, and I failed a lot, like a lot. And, you know, I had no savings at one point. I kept making mistakes, and that's okay. You're young. It's the time to do it. Like, when you're in your 40s and your 50s, it's much harder because you've got a mortgage and all that kind of stuff. But when you're young, at the start of your career, just do whatever you want to do, even if it means that you're two steps back later on. I promise you, it will take you to where you need to be later on.
I love that rule of the power of five. I'm still thinking about them. In my head, I'm going, who is in my inner circle of five? Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, the idea of failing and accepting failure, but also failing forward. So, you know, you never know, you can never grow if you don't step outside of that comfort zone. It's only as big as where you feel comfortable. So that's amazing. And I guess that really comes to our final question and the conclusion of this podcast. Were there any questions that you hoped you would be asked, or any topics that you'd like to further discuss that we haven't asked you already?
Oh, that's a good question. I think you guys asked really great questions tonight, actually. I had a really great time.
Well done, Ella. High five.
High five, guys. Good job. I think that understanding the role of medical cannabis in Australia and the impact that it has on current patients and the current barriers is a really important topic, but it is a big topic, so it probably deserves another podcast so that you can go through a lot of the hurdles. A lot of the hurdles are very political, also very social as well, and they're so integral to the current medical system in Australia, which is not perfect right now. There's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of education to be done. And at ASHRA, we're doing a lot of work in the background to provide more support. But yeah, it is a journey. But I think my team and I are really, really excited. We've mapped out all of 2023 and we've got lots of goals to kick this year. So hopefully we start trying to help these patients overcome these barriers sooner rather than later.
I love that. Thank you so much, Lisa. I feel like I really resonated with that a lot because I feel like I have a lot of passion and I really want to do all these things, but then there's no like clear or concise goal at the moment of what I actually want to do. Yep. So really nice hearing from someone who is kind of at the stage, well, was at the stage that I am currently.
What you have right now is a desire fire, and that's rare. Like, that fire is really rare. You don't have to define that fire right now because it's going to grow and morph and move and, you know, duck and weave as life goes on. But so long as you have that fire, then it will take you to places and you can use that as your advantage.
Thank you, Lisa. This has been such a great podcast and it was really inspiring speaking with you today. We have definitely taken away a lot of learnings from this podcast and we just want to thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And to the listeners out there as well, thank you everyone for listening. And if you want to follow Lisa and follow along with what she's doing in the future and expanding to Byron and all the other places that you have in mind as well, you can follow her on her socials. Do you have any particular social media account that you would like to turn people to?
So my Instagram is at Lisa the Holistic Pharmacist, and our ASHRA one is at ASHRA.dispensary. And we are also hiring at ASHRA at the moment as well. So don't be afraid to click on our ads in Locomate and also in Seek as well, to apply and be part of this story with me.
Love that. For any listeners that haven't already, you can visit www.jobsinpharmacy.com.au to elevate your pharmacy career today.